Right, so we're looking at a discourse that was said on in 1953 on the Shabbat, which we're approaching. We're approaching Shabbat, Parshat Shemot. And the discourse doesn't actually refer to Shemot at all. It's on a particular verse, which is the final verse of Song of Songs. So I thought, let's just have a look at the this last chapter of Song of Songs that we've got here. And it's the penultimate verse, actually. So here you have this, as it were, that's the first page that we've got. So there's this sort of expression of love between the Shulamit, the woman, and the man. And the man is variously explained as being King Solomon, or in some sense the divine, and the woman is the Jewish people, or the individual, the soul, and God. And so it's a very beautiful work. If we can just look maybe at the second page. And this is really the it's on the back. That's right, the final page of the Song of Songs. So this is where it says the penultimate verse: Hayoshevet Beganim, you in the feminine who dwell in the gardens, Chaverim Makshivim LeKolech, friends are listening to your voice. Hashmi ini, let me hear. Brach dodi, flee, my beloved. Udmei lecha letzvi, be like a gazelle. O leofer ha'ayalim, or like a young hart. Al harib samim, on mountains of spices. So this sort of beautiful atmosphere of this fleeing, this fleeing like a gazelle running away to mountains of spices. All right, so it's that verse which is taken at the beginning of this discourse, and we try to understand that verse. So in order to understand the discourse, there's the melody of the discourse. And so we'll begin with the melody in order to try to understand it. Oh, yo, yam, ba, ya, ya, yo, ya, yo, ya, ya, ra, ya, ra, yo, ya, yo, yam, ba, ba, ya, ya, ba, yo, yam, bo, ha, ya, da, dam, ba, ya, da, dam, ba, yo, ba, ho, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, yam, ba, yo, ha yedidam ba yam ba yom ba yedidam ba ha yedidam ba yo ya yam ba yam ba bam bam ha yam ba ya yam ba bam bam ho yam ba yo yam bam bam. So now if we look at the actual text, Hayoshevet Beganim, the one who dwells in gardens, Brach Dodi, flee, my beloved, and then al hareb samim, to mountains of spices. Umavaya admoma Rashab, now the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rashab, who passed away in 1920, he explained, b'ma'amaro dibo matril zeh, he said in a discourse which began with the same verse, and he said it, sh'amaro b'chaftal tevet, he said it on the 24th of Tevet. Now today is actually the 15th of Tevet, but the 20th of Tevet is going to be the yahrzeit of the Rambam, and the 24th of Tevet is the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi. So it's this atmosphere of yahrzeit.
Shahayoshevet beganim, that when we speak of the one who is dwelling in the gardens, what does it mean, the gardens? Medaber begilui de gan Eden. It's talking about the revelation of the Garden of Eden. Now, why does it say in the plural gardens, ganim, leshon rabim in the plural, heim gan Eden hatachton began Eden elyon, the lower gan Eden, the lower Garden of Eden, and the upper Garden of Eden, which are in the worlds of Briya, Yetzira, Asiya, in the worlds of creation, formation, and action. And he explains that the lower Garden of Eden is in the world of action, and then which means still a spiritual world. And then you come to a higher level, and a higher level, and then you have the upper Garden of Eden. This one? Hey? One second. Yeah. No, you have to begin the other end. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Right. So now we're on line 7. If you can see the line numbers in the middle column, right? V'hayoshevet beganim, and the one who dwells in the garden, haynu malchut d'atzilut. This is kingship of Atzilut, which is generally described as the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence. Shemetzamtzemet hatzma leishev beganim. It contracts itself in order to dwell in the gardens of the Gardens of Eden, the Garden of Eden. Now then when we say, Ubrach dodi, flee my beloved, al hareb samim, to the mountains of spices, medaber begilui de la atid lavo. This speaks of the revelation of the future. Shehu na'ale harbe yoter, which is much greater. Va'ad be'ein aroch, infinitely greater. Mehagilui de gan Eden, than the revelation of the Garden of Eden. So we have the concept that there are different stages of revelation of the divine. On one level, we're bathed in the divine. Everything that surrounds us is divine. And everything that exists is there because of a divine input. We exist ourselves. We ourselves are an expression of this. And yet, the divine quality, for the most part, is concealed. Lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. Man cannot see me and live, God said to Moses. When Moses asked God, Moses was in a very intimate relationship with God. He was on the mountain, on Mount Sinai. And he was just pleading with God, trying to gain forgiveness for the Jewish people. And there was a point when he thought God would be able to reveal more of himself to him than ever before. And he said, reveal to me your glory. And God said, man cannot see me and live. So in other words, we finite human beings, if too much of the infinite were revealed to us, it would be too much for us. And our soul would not be able to remain in our body. Because when the soul is in the body, there's a certain constriction. It's constricting for the soul. It's limiting. And the immense revelation of godliness that could take place would be so much that the soul would refuse to be limited by the body anymore. So all the time, like a candle, we imagine a candle that the flame on the candle is reaching upwards. So the medieval scientists used to say the reason for that is because there's a sphere of fire around the earth. And that's the source of the element fire. And the flame of the candle is reaching for its source. So the Kabbalists adopted this image to explain the nature of the soul. The soul comes from God, and it's part of godliness. And it's within our body, but it's in a kind of constricted situation. So it's all the time reaching upwards. So the same way that the flame is reaching upwards, so the soul is also reaching upwards. And you have to be careful because the connection of the soul to the wick, to the body, is fragile. And too intense a revelation of godliness would just draw the soul away and it would disappear into the infinite and the person would no longer be fulfilling their task of living here in this world.
That's what happened at Sinai.
That is what happened at Sinai. Yes, that's true. The sages tell us that at Mount Sinai, parchan nishmatam, the souls of the Jewish people fled, and they had to be revived with the dew which will in the future revive the dead. So Sinai was itself an example of such an intense revelation that we couldn't take it. And as a result, what the text tells us is that the people asked Moses, "We can't take this great experience. You go close to God and tell us what he says, but it's too much for us." Which is an interesting concept, you know. And the sages tell us Moses was disappointed that we weren't able to take, that we didn't thirst for this intense experience ourselves. And the Talmud, in the famous story of the four who entered the deepest secrets of the Torah, in the second chapter of Chagigah, there speaks about four people, three of whom are in some way harmed, and one of them, exactly this happens, he dies. His soul leaves him, and he passes away as a result of the ecstatic, mystical experience.
I thought only one survived.
Yes, one survived intact. Mm. Of the second and third, one died, that's the first one. The second and third, one became a recluse, and the third left the practice of Judaism. The fourth was Rabbi Akiva, who entered in peace and came out in peace. Yes, you're quite right. So only one survived intact. So for the soul is in a kind of fragile position here in this world. And so therefore, when the soul leaves the world, suddenly there can be remarkable revelations of the divine. And that takes place in the realm that we call the Garden of Eden, or as it puts it here, the Gardens of Eden, because they're different levels of the Garden of Eden. So the soul enters the Garden of Eden, and there it's exposed to an intense divine radiance. However, what we've just learned is that in comparison with the radiance of the future, of Olam Haba, the world to come, or Atid Lavo, the future to come, that is an infinitely higher dimension. And so therefore, from the point of view of the soul in the Garden of Eden, it's a leap, it's a jump to a much higher level. And that's really what is meant by the Song of Songs saying, flee, run away, brach, flee. It's like a leap to the mountains of spices. And the mountains of spices represent this infinitely higher spiritual level of the world to come. Were you going to ask something?
But that the world comes higher than Eden.
Yes.
Eden.
Yeah, that's...
I don't think anything could be higher than
Well, there are a number of ways of understanding this. There's a famous saying by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, which he said in Yiddish, and I'll translate it. Ich will sie gar nicht. I don't want them at all. Ich will nicht dein Gan Eden. I don't want your Garden of Eden. Ich will nicht dein Olam Haba. I don't want your world to come. Ich will nur dich allein. I want only you. So that is him speaking to God, saying that he doesn't want these revelations of the divine. Now, the Garden of Eden is a revelation of the divine, which is very great, as you say. But even that can be transcended by the world to come. So the world to come is an even greater revelation. But what Rabbi Shneur Zalman is saying, he doesn't even want that. He just wants God beyond all these revelations. Now, it's an interesting polarity that you have in Chabad thought, the difference between the revelation and the essence. So that which is revealed is always in some way secondary to the essence. That's the way it's described. And so in our relationship with the divine, revelations are very beautiful and very intoxicating. But beyond them, there's the essence. Now, this can go, as it were, you know, like sort of higher and higher levels. And so the Garden of Eden, or the different levels of Garden of Eden, are seen as revelations, beautiful revelations of divine radiance, of everything one, you know, any term one might imagine to be able to apply to them. But it's not the essence. The world to come is closer to the essence. So the world to come is a higher dimension of revelation. Now, in order to explain the difference between the two here, this is on line 11, he's going to explain it in terms of different kinds of spiritual light. The Hagilui de Gan Eden, the revelation of the Garden of Eden, Hu Or Hamamale, is the radiance which fills the worlds. The Hagilui de la Atid Lavo, and the revelation of the future to come, Hu Or Hasovev, is the revelation which surrounds the world. Now, in fact, for the next few paragraphs, he's going to be talking about this. We may contract it. But let's just try to understand, basically, what this means. If we conceive of a kind of a circle, the radiance within this circle has been somehow withdrawn, right? And what is happening is there is a flow of light which is giving life to the worlds from within. And this flow of light, which I depict as a kind of a cone, because at the top end it's broader, there's more, it's more intense. And as you go down lower, this thin tapering cone, the radiance becomes less intense, so that it's able to give existence to the world. And we could imagine that in that circle at the end, that's the whole universe, everything in the physical world is being given existence by this radiance. In fact, we could think of that as being the physical level, and then you might say that there are spiritual worlds which are on higher levels, so one can speak about that as well. So there are spiritual levels and then the physical realm. Okay.
And which is the world after above?
Right. So now comes the world after. Now this, what lies behind this outer circle is the infinite, right? The boundless, infinite Ein Sof. And from the radiance of the infinite, there is this kind of what's called a surrounding light, but it's not really surrounding. In English, we would say it's an all-pervasive light. So in fact, there is a radiance which covers the whole picture. And it's not a radiance which gets less when it's dealing with a more delicate, like lower structure, because it pervades everything. Now, in modern terms, trying to understand images for this, an example is sometimes given of the difference between sound and radio waves. Sound permeates objects, according to the nature of that object. And the sound waves are very tangible. You know, if you're underwater and there's some kind of sounds underwater, you know, it has a particular quality. And if we're in the air, the sound has a particular quality. If you're listening through wood, then you have the whole concept of sounding boards and the way in which a violin or a guitar will give you a body of air which will respond to and express the sound in a particular way. Now, compared with that, compared with that, radio waves just simply permeate everything. In this room here, if we bothered to sit with the right kind of radio, you know, we could pick up, you know, radio this and radio that, all kinds of different things, and except, you know, if one is in a really insulated place, for the most part, the radio waves just permeate everything. So that's a kind of a modern example to express the difference between these two kinds of radiance. So one is the mamalik olamin, which we can call the inner radiance, which fills, which enters and fills, right? Mamale meaning filling. And then there is soiver kolalmin, surrounding, soiver, which is really permeating everything. Now, this permeating radiance is of a higher order. It's not just higher, it's a different kind of radiance.
Where is the hidden light? Where would that be? The hidden light is in the world to come, isn't
it? Right, the Or HaGanuz, the realm which is... So within that sovev, within that permeating radiance, that's where the hidden light is. That hidden light which is hidden in the world to come. So, for example, the sages speak of the light of the first day of creation. God said, let there be light. But the sun, moon, and stars were only created on the fourth day, the Wednesday. Whereas on Sunday, God said, let there be light. So what is that light? So the sages said, that's the hidden light which is hidden in the world to come, or it's hidden in the Torah, the different expressions. But it's something which is hidden in the world to come. So in this surrounding permeating radiance, which is of a higher order and comes much more directly from the infinite permeating everything, that is where the hidden radiance is to be discovered. That's a way of understanding that. So there's the inner radiance within and the surrounding radiance there. And so the theme of the beginning of this discourse is that the difference between these two is so great that in order to get from one to the other, it's like a leap. It's a leap because it's entering a completely different order of existence. And it's a different order, different level of relationship with the divine. Now, let's just follow it a little bit. Shaha Aliyah, one second. Line 11. The Hagilui de Gan Eden, the revelation of the Garden of Eden, Hu Ohamamale, is the inner filling radiance. The Hagilui de la Atid Lavo, and the revelation of the future to come, Hu Ohasobeb, is the surrounding transcending radiance. The Zeu Mashe Katu Brach, that's why it says flee and go to Hareb Samim, mountains of spices. Brach dafka, specifically flee. Shahaliyah me'agilui de'gan Eden, this ascent from the revelation of the Garden of Eden, la'agilui de'la'asid lavod, to the revelation of the future to come, hu b'derech bricha v'dilug, is in a way of fleeing or leaping. Shelo b'seder v'hadraga, not just a matter of going steps higher and higher. You see, within this inner radiance, you could imagine going steps higher and higher, coming to a more intense inner radiance, just going step by step. But to get to the permeating, surrounding radiance, It's of a completely different order. It's something different, and it's like a, like we people say in physics, you know, a quantum leap. Mm. It's some complete change of state somehow. It's that leap. But Afa Pikein, and nonetheless, even though the surrounding radiance is infinitely greater than the inner radiance, Bichdeile, this is line 14, Bichdeile Kabel Gilu or Hasover, in order to receive the revelation of the surrounding radiance, the La'atid Lavo of the future, Hudavka al Yedei Kedimat HaGilui, it's specifically through first having the revelation of Or HaMamaleh Shebegan Eden, of the inner radiance in the Garden of Eden. So you have to go through the experience of the inner radiance and the beautiful revelations of the inner radiance. Now, if we're going to position where is the Garden of Eden, if we say that this is our physical world, so then this is the spiritual world of action, and that's formation, and that's creation. So the gardens of Eden are at this higher level. So in order to prepare oneself, so to speak, or prepare the soul for the intense revelation of the Soveb, of the permeating radiance, one has to go through these inner gardens of Eden first.
In an incarnated state.
Well, the point is the soul, when it leaves the world, is able to enter the Garden of Eden.
But not till then, I see. We can't do it through meditation in this world.
It's interesting that, because one can sometimes taste aspects of the Garden of Eden in this world, through contemplation and prayer, for example. But we can also connect with the surrounding radiance as well, while we're in this world. For example, the mitzvah of the Torah. The fact of keeping a mitzvah is a connection. And it's a connection with a very intense level of the divine. So when we keep a mitzvah, we are bonding with that exalted level. The only problem is, we are not aware of the intensity of the energy. It's like the radio waves going through us. We're not aware of it. If there was a very loud sound, we would be aware of it. Oh, it's too noisy, I can't take the sound. But the radio wave doesn't make any impression on us. So when we carry out a mitzvah, we're actually being connected at a very exalted level, and we're not sensitive to it, and because of that we're able to do it. Because if we were sensitive, the energy could be so great that it would again have a destructive force. Right? So all the time we're balancing the intensity of this kind of spiritual experience with the quest for ever higher levels, and the danger which is involved, and the way in which God in various ways insulates us so that we're able to make these connections without being electrocuted. So that's the paradox of spiritual life, and in fact in our lives as human beings, you know, very often there are versions of this, you know, in our quest for experience, which can be very beautiful and wholesome and wonderful experience, and yet at the same time, sometimes can be overbalancing, and so the whole struggle to keep them. Everything seems making sense. That's right. So we're so now line 15. V'zeu ha-yoshevet baganim. That's why the verse said, you who dwell in the gardens. That means the soul dwelling in the garden. Or the divine presence dwelling in the garden. V'achakach, and after that, brach dodi, flee, my beloved, al harib samim, to mountains of incense. Shebetchilat tzarich liot ha-gilui. First there has to be the revelation. This is line 16. The Hayoshevet Beganim, of the one dwelling in the gardens, Ba'al Yedei Zedavka, and through that, Magiim Bederech Bricha Badilog, one comes through a way of fleeing and leaping, the Gilui de Hareb Samim to the much higher revelation of mountains of spices. Now, in section Bet, he explains the idea, the difference between the inner radiance and the surrounding radiance. And I think if I can just summarize this, the idea is that the inner radiance has many divisions. It can be contracted and lower and lower levels, so that it's able to somehow fit inside everything. Whereas the surrounding radiance is a higher dimension which transcends everything and is able to and permeates everything. Now, in fact, he doesn't explain it here, but there is the idea that physical existence comes into being through an interaction between both of these types of radiance acting together. That you have the inner radiance providing the inner spiritual dimension, and the outer radiance and the kind of the point where they interface, that's where you get physical reality. So, and it's interesting for an artist, this is one of the points I tried to explain in my talk. That the idea of physical reality is in fact an expression of something very exalted. And it expresses the point where this surrounding radiance, as it were, interfaces with the inner radiance. And I'm using language which is influenced by things I've heard of about a hologram, you know, these light images, which again are, you know, two different wavelengths of light, and they interface together, and at the point where they interfere with each other, that's where you get this image. So it's almost as if our world is such an image, a divine, an image created by the divine through these different forces of divine radiance which are interacting together. Now, he doesn't actually explain that here. But what he does talk about is the difference in kind of nature of the inner radiance, which has which divides up into different levels of intensity, and the surrounding radiance, which transcends everything and permeates everything on a higher level. And the other thing is that the inner radiance is affected by the vessel it's in, like sound. You know, so the sound waves are affected. If they're going through wood, or they're going through air, or they're going through water, they're affected by whatever it is that's carrying them. Whereas the radio wave, at a certain level, you know, for argument's sake, is not. Let's say you could be sitting in a indoors, outdoors, it's the radio wave generally has the same the same effect. So that's just as an image. But there is this sense of a divine radiance which is not limited and not affected. Now, he talks about that in section 2, and in section 3, Gimel, which is page Vav, he speaks about the way that the inner radiance comes into being. So this is on page Zion. Move on to page Zion. Yeah. You see, in order to get the inner radiance, there had to be a whole process first, which is called Tzimtzum. Right? Now you've heard of that. Right. Now Tzimtzum is the point, we're looking at page Zion. Yeah. At the beginning of the story, if we just imagine that there's like a white page, so that white page is filled with godliness. There's only the infinite radiance of the divine. Then comes the moment of Tzimtzum, where in some sense the radiance is drawn to the edges. That's the literal meaning of the word Tzimtzum, contraction. Although later Kabbalists say it's not really contraction, it's a kind of veiling, but anyway, in this middle sphere, there is some intense veiling of this divine radiance. And then comes a new kind of light, which is now piercing this concealed realm in order to create worlds. Now that light, which is the inner radiance, is a kind of a new kind of light. It's a light which comes after the Tzimtzum. The way it's explained here, the surrounding radiance is just the infinite. It's not anything new. It's the infinite as the infinite is, and the infinite is, in a sense, not bothered by this whole process and just goes on shining through the whole thing.
So do we have the inner radiance in this world?
Yes. Yeah. In this world and in the world to come. And in the Garden of Eden. So the inner radiance is here in this world and also in the Garden of Eden, also in spiritual realm. There's the inner radiance. The all-pervasive, infinite, transcendent radiance, let's use the word transcendent, which is maybe a bit more. This transcendent radiance means it's not affected by anything. You could use the word immanent radiance for this inner radiance. So there's the immanent and the transcendent. So there's the radiance within everything and the radiance which is beyond everything. But beyond doesn't mean it's not there. It is there. But it's just beyond the distinctions of everything. So the point is that to get the whole nature of the inner radiance is that it comes after the Tzimtzum. There is... you see, that's the kind that Tzimtzum is the abyss, if you like. That concealment, that darkness. And it's only after that darkness that we have this inner radiance, which is reduced in such a way that we're able to be cognizant of it in some sense, spiritually, here in this world. You know, like looking at a beautiful scene and seeing the spiritual radiance within it. One of the quotes I used in that talk was from the late Lubavitcher Rebbe. He said, the role of the artist is to perceive the spiritual radiance within existence and to paint a painting which expresses that. And the viewer of the painting is then able to also sense that spiritual radiance which otherwise they would not have been aware of. So it's this inner radiance, on the one hand, which is being expressed in the work of art, and on another level, even the transcendent radiance, because the very form of something comes from the interaction between the transcendent and the immanent. So that's what gives it the actual physical shape, which is there. So a person could really paint in a transport of ecstatic sense of communion with the divine. Because what they're revealing, I mean, it might look like a tree or a plant or an abstract painting, but what it's actually expressing is godliness. I actually referred to Kandinsky's book on the spiritual in art, you know, sort of... using quotes from that to try to explain. So here on page 7, it's explaining the way that the inner radiance is a product of Tzimtzum, but then beyond Tzimtzum is the infinite transcendent radiance. So then we come on page 8. To the idea of the leap. So there's this long Kabbalistic explanation just focusing on the difference between these two kinds of radiance. And then we come on page 8 to section Dalet. V'zehu sha'aliyah me'agilui de'gan Eden. That is why the ascent from the revelation Do you have that? Page 8? Chet? Page Chet. Sorry. There. Yeah, with the Dalet. That's why the ascent mehagilui de Gan Eden from the revelation of the Garden of Eden lahagilui de la atid lavo to the revelations of the world to come, he bederech bricha is like is fleeing, is leaping, as explained earlier. The leap diuk halashon brach. Flee al harib samim to mountains of spices. The kevan shachiluk shebein oham amale. Since the difference between the radiance which fills the world, hagilui de Gan Eden, the revelation of the Garden of Eden, lo hasobev to the transcendent radiance, the radiance of the world to come. Hu lo rak sheoham amale ba behitchalkut al yedei hakelim. It's not just that the radiance, this imminent radiance, comes with different gradations of radiance according to what vessel it is filling. But also the way in which the radiance comes from its source. Because the imminent radiance comes through the interruption of tzimtzum. But that's not the case with the transcendent radiance, which just simply flows independent of the tzimtzum, independent of the concealment. Hari muvan, so we can understand, shahachiluk shebeinayim, the difference between these two types of radiance, hu chiluk shebein aroch, is an infinite difference. V'lachein, and therefore, ha'il aliyah me'agilu de Gan Eden, the ascent from the revelation of the Garden of Eden, the inner radiance, lahagilui de la atid lavo, to the radiance of the time to come, the transcendent radiance, hu bederech bricha, is fleeing, is jumping, is leaping. The kamo shaham shachad or hakav, in the same way that the flow of the light, this cone of light, it's called the light of the kav, of the line, from the radiance of the infinite before the tzimtzum, hu bederech diluk. In order to get to this cone of light, there is a leap from the infinite radiance that precedes it. And the leap is the tzimtzum, the concealment. Kein gam aliyah me'or hamamale. Similarly, leaping from this in the reverse direction, as it were, from the from this level of radiance to the transcendent radiance, which is, and that transcendent radiance is the radiance of the infinite, which is before the tzimtzum, is also in a leap, shaloba seder v'hadraga, not in a just moving step by step, but some kind of leap.
But isn't it a leap even to get to the Gan Eden?
It's true that that's a leap, but of a lower order, an easier leap. It's like a leap, like going up steps. So you might have to jump from step number 2 to step number 3. So it's a high step, and you have to jump or clamber up. It is a leap. But here we're talking about a leap which is just to a different, like a quantum leap, to a different realm. Yes. Yeah. But that's a very good point. Okay. We now come to section Hey, section 5, which is on page 10. Yep. Now at this point we've understood the terminology in the Song of Songs. You know, why it's saying flee, leap. Now, omnom, however, imeyot shahagilu de Gan Eden, even though the revelation of the Garden of Eden, hu be'ein aroch lahagilu de la'atid, is infinitely lower than the revelation of the future world. Afa pichein, nonetheless, as he said earlier, Hagilu the Gan Eden, the revelation of the Garden of Eden, who Hakdama, is an introduction. Shal Yado Dafka Magim Lagilu de Latit. Through this introduction, we come to the revelation of the future, as explained at the beginning. Ve'inyin hu, and now to understand this, we're going to turn to another concept, the 13 attributes of mercy. Dehine kodem yudgimu midot harachamim. Before the 13 attributes of mercy. Now, the 13 attributes of mercy were revealed by God to Moses when Moses was on the mountain and Moses was saying, I want to come very close to you. And God said, man cannot see me and live. And then God said, you know what? You will stand in the crevice of the rock. I will shelter you with my hand. You will only see my back. But what God actually does is says this prayer of the 13 attributes of mercy. So the 13 attributes of mercy represent a very exalted revelation of the divine, if you like, as much as we're able to take in this world. Now, the beginning of the 13 attributes of mercy, the name Hashem, Yudke Vavke, appears twice. In a synagogue, in a United Synagogue, there's a melody that this is sung when the 13 attributes of mercy are recited, usually on a festival. Hashem, Hashem, Keurachum Chanun, Erech Abayim, Rav Chesed V'emet. Now, the word Yudke Vavke, which comes at the beginning, that's what it's focusing on here. Now, at the beginning, as the introduction to the 13 attributes, it says, Hashem, Hashem, twice the divine name, Upsik Taima Begavayim. And there's a kind of a line in between them. When you look at it in the prayer book, there's like a line in between, which is a kind of a grammatical thing. And the Kabbalists and the sages explain these grammatical features as well. V'yadur, and it's known. The Havaya HaRishon, the first tetragrammaton, Hu Havaya de La'ela, is the upper tetragrammaton. Shem Havaya Sheba'or Ein Sof Shelefnei HaTzimtzum, the name Yudke Vavke, which is in the radiance of the infinite before the Tzimtzum. Okay, so so there we have the divine name. I'll just call it Hashem. Okay, Hashem the name. So we have the divine name, which is part of this infinite realm before the Tzimtzum. That's the first Yudke Vavke. Vahavaya Hasheni, and the second name, Hu Havaya Delatata, is the lower name, Shem Havaya Sheba'or HaKav, the name Yudke Vavke, which is within the line of light. So we have a name Hashem over here as well, which is within this line of light. Upsik Tamba Begaveil, and the interruption between them, the line in between, Hu Hefsik HaTzimtzum. That's the interruption of the Tzimtzum. The difference between the radiance of the infinite up here and the radiance which is flowing down there, it's the Tzimtzum which is the difference. Let's maybe put in the word Tzimtzum just so that we're able to. Right, so there's the Tzimtzum, the event, as it were, of the Tzimtzum, which makes the difference between these two different kinds of light. And so that is the interruption between the two names, Yudke Vavke. Vazeho, now this is also 9:10, Gam ma shekatub bepasuk rishon dekriyat Shema. Now this is a very beautiful idea. In the first verse of the Shema, we say Shema Yisrael, hear O Israel, Hashem, then Elokeinu, Hashem, and then we say Hashem again. So the first Hashem is this Hashem up here. The word Elokeinu represents the Tzimtzum, as he says here. The Elokeinu Hu Atzimtzum is the concealment Shebein Hashem de Le'ela, which interrupts between the upper Yudke Vavke, the infinite radiance before the Tzimtzum, the Hashem de Le'tata, and the lower divine name, or Hakav, the radiance of this flow of light. So Hashem Elokeinu Hashem is like Hashem Elokeinu Hashem. So one is, this is a way of meditating on what the Shema means. That you're thinking Shema Yisrael. Shema means listen, but also gather together. There's a verse, Vayeshama Shaul et Ha'am. King Saul gathered the people together. And so the word Vayeshama expresses gathering together. Yisrael is you speaking to yourself, your inner being. That's the Israel inside one. Perceive this in immense reality of Hashem, the godliness beyond everything, Elokeinu, and then there's the Tzimtzum, and then there's Hashem, and then there's Echad, which is the world, and the Aleph represents the godliness. The Chet is the numerical value 8, which represents the 7 heavens and the earth, so that's the 8, and the Dalet is on the earth, 4, representing east, west, north, south. So in a sense what one is saying is perceive this, you say to yourself, listen, how godliness from the very highest dimension pervades, enters, and is expressed in everything around. And so that is a contemplation of the Shema, and here it's intensified with this concept of the two names, Yudke Vavke, being on two completely different levels. We're on line 13. Umavai Bamaima, and it explains in this discourse of the Rebbe Rashab, the Rebbe Sholem Dober, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, which this is discussing. The Masha Katuv Elokeinu, that the fact that it says Elokeinu in between the two names Yudke Bavke. Now this word Elokeinu is a very interesting word, because there's the word Elokim and there's the word Elokeinu. What's the difference between Elokim and Elokeinu? Yeah, the nu. And what does nu mean?
Us.
Our God. The word Elokeinu, unlike the word Elokim, im heyoto more al midat hadin, even though it expresses the attribute of severity. So normally, when we have the two names, Yudke Vavke on the one hand, and Elokim on the other, Elokim represents severity, and Yudke Vavke represents kindness, chesed. So even though Elokim represents the attribute of severity, when we say Elokeinu, our God, yesh bo hataya lechesed ulerachmim, it's nonetheless got a quality of kindness and mercy. Ki al yedei Elokeinu, because it's through this concept, our God, this concealment, this tzimtzum, Hu hachibur sheyum shechagilu v'ashefa ma'ashem de la'elu la'ashem de la'tata. It's through the Tzimtzum that we're able to get the infinite revelation up here, down and connecting into the it's also infinite, but a lower level of infinity, down there. So this kind of Tzimtzum is Elokeinu, our God. In other words, there's darkness, but the darkness is for our benefit. The darkness is there for our benefit. You could say, like, someone needs to have an operation. So in order to have the operation, there's an anesthetic. So the anesthetic You could imagine that, God forbid, the anesthetic's a terrible thing. What's happening to the person? They're completely comatose, they can't move, they can't speak. But that is actually the way in which the kindness of the positive operation is able to take place. So in order to get the flow of godliness from this transcendent level down into a level where it's able to become part of our own real, tangible, physical lives, there has to be the tzimtzum. But the tzimtzum is not negative. It looks negative, but it's not. It's our God. It's Elokeinu. Elokeinu rather than just Elokim. Now, obviously, that concept has lots of ramifications. The idea of concealments, which look like a concealment, and yet it's really for our benefit in some sense, and that way of interpreting it. Now, in order to explain this, it's going to speak about the vessels of the Sfirot. Right, so you're familiar with the idea that there's the radiance and the vessel. Okay, so let's look at line 17. V'yesh lomar, and one can suggest, habeyur b'zeh, and that explanation of this. This is as is known concerning the vessels of the Sfira, of the divine emanations. That even though, if the radiance of this line of light would have been there, lo haya efshar liyot hitabut hakelim. In other words, if there hadn't been a tzimtzum, if there had all the time been the radiance which is filling the whole middle, you couldn't have the creation of vessels. Umikol makom, nonetheless, la'acharei shenitavu akelim, after the vessels came into being, heim yicholim nekabel et hagilui de'o'akav, they are now able to receive this radiance. Now that's an interesting paradox. The vessels could not have been there. You have to have the tzimtzum, because through the tzimtzum, before the tzimtzum, there's this intense radiance. The vessels couldn't stand in that radiance. Then we have the tzimtzum, then we have the flow of the line of light. Now even the flow of the line of light, if that line of light had been there before, the vessels would not be able to hold it. They would be dissolved away. So you have the tzimtzum, a complete tzimtzum, and now you're able to have the vessel, and now the vessel is able to contain this light. Okay, it's true, it can't contain that light. But it does contain this light. Now, Kikevan, line 21, Shehitavutam haitar yedea tzimtzum. Since the bringing of existence of the vessels was through the concealment of tzimtzum, bederech siluk dafka, where the light is removed, lachein nitavu ba'ofen hazeh, kazeh, therefore they come into being in such a way, d'lo rak she'einam mitbatlim me'agilui d'o akav, not only do they not dissolve away, the vessels don't dissolve away from the revelation of the light in this cone of light, but even more, it's the vessels which promote the revelation of the light. You see, the function of the vessels come into being because there was a complete concealment. And that sort of paradox, perhaps, is there associated with the vessel, that the vessel is a product of concealment with the intention to reveal. It's a concealment which intends to reveal. And so, the whole process of having the vessels of the Sfirot down here is in order to reveal the divine radiance. That's why they're there. The vessels of the Sfirot are to bring the divine radiance to lower and lower levels. So the paradox of the vessel is that on the one hand it hides the light, and on the other it enables the light to descend to a lower and lower level. Now, that's a very subtle concept, but also a very powerful concept, because it relates to an artist painting a painting. The painting, on one level, is a vessel expressing what the person is trying to communicate. Now, inside the artist, there might be an intensity of feeling, which is, you know, is unspeakable. It's beyond being communicated in any way. And at a certain level, the painting is only is only communicating a tiny bit of what is inside. And on the other hand, it is communicating something. You know, so there's this paradox of concealment and revelation all the time. Concealment and revelation. And the same with words. You know, saying something in words, where the words conceal the intense idea, and yet they reveal. So that's, and that's very much the nature of existence that we're in, where there is all the time this balance between revelation and concealment. So if we go on to the next page, that's page Yud.
When you talk about the abyss, is that the darkness?
Yeah, that's the darkness of the concealment.
And if we didn't have that, that you're saying that's like the anesthetic, because that veils us from too much light.
Mm, yes.
Is that what
yes,
you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes. And so it veils us, and we can sometimes get stuck in the veiling, you know, conceptually and spiritually. A person can somehow be trapped in that veiling and just see the veiling, you know, and one can, you know, you can look at so many horrors in life around us. And how can that possibly be? And that's the secret of the veiling. That's the veiling of the divine.
And is most light at the depth of the abyss? Is that how one can retrieve the most light from going to the real depth of the abyss? Is that
well? Now that's a very interesting thing.
Because that's where the foundations are. They clear it, like David retrieved.
Mm, yes. Yes.
From the abyss,
yeah, I mean, there's certainly the concept that going into the darkness is a way of coming to the most intense kind of light. Mm. In this particular discourse, it's not explaining it in that way, but that certainly is there, the idea of going into the darkness. Actually, in Hanukkah discourses about Hanukkah, speak about the darkness and the light of the Hanukkah lamp, which comes from complete concealment, like the flint stone which has been left under water, and water which would extinguish any kind of light, and yet you can take the flint out and bang it with a hammer and there's still a spark inside the flint, and that spark which cannot be destroyed, and that spark can not just push away the darkness but make the darkness itself shine. So that's a whole further beautiful dimension. But here we're looking at the darkness as something that you lightly skip over. See, and that's this leap. So here it's talking about this leap. So one is leaping, but one isn't getting stuck in the darkness. You just leap over. Now, let's go to section Vav on page Yud, or Mamshech Vamayim. Now, he continues in the discourse, the Alpia Mavov Amokim Acher, according to that which is explained elsewhere, the Elokeinu Eloka Shelanu, that the word Elokeinu means our God. Actually, he's now interpreting it in a slightly different way. Hushem Havaya Shebechol Echad Be'Echad Mi'Yisrael is the name Yudke Vavke, which is within each person, particularly each Jew. Chelek Havaya Imo, a portion of God within each individual. So you see, our mind is like the Yud, and then the Hey, and then the Vav is the emotions, and the other Hey is our actions, our speech and actions. So one can, it's a meditation to think about the way the Yudke Vavke is inside oneself as a person. So if we interpret the name Elokeinu as meaning the godliness inside us, our God, the godliness inside us, and the Yudke Vavke means, and that godliness inside us means the inner Yudke Vavke. Muvan od yoter, then it's even more understandable that Elokeinu mechaber shtei hashemot, that the word Elokeinu joins the two names. Here, O Israel, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one. So in between the two, the Lords, the two Yudke Vavke, there's Elokeinu, and what's in the middle? Our personal, private godliness inside us. The al yedei avodat Yisrael, through the service of the Jewish people and the Jewish individual, Ba'arba otiyot ha-yudke bavke shebenefesh, with the four letters of the divine name which are in the individual soul. Nase ha-chibur d'shtei ha-shemot. There is the unification of the two names, Hashem. So we are standing astride this tzimtzum. That's us, with a physical body and physical complications and so on. But a divine name inside us as well. And so we are able to make to join those two levels. Sheba Hashem de Latata Mei Hagilu de Hashem de Le'ela, that what we cause is that in the lower name, which infuses the world, we are drawing from the exalted transcendent name. And because we're standing in the middle, we're able to make that shift. Omevai Shamani explains that the inyan ha-yud d'shem havaya shebenefesh, that the letter yud of the tetragrammaton in the soul, hu hanachat hatzmuto. Now this is a very subtle passage, and maybe we can follow it. It's subtle, not because it's intellectually demanding, it's spiritually demanding. So let's see if we can follow it. The yud of the divine name is the abandoning of oneself. Azelek tzichavek legamrei tzu elokus. He puts himself aside completely to godliness. Ve'enu mitchashev b'mshichlo, and he's not concerned about his own intellect or anything else. So this yud, this letter yud, expresses total self-abandon. Going beyond oneself, one way of seeing it. See, that also has to do with the leap. The leap, you know, like just going beyond.
That's like the quote that you gave before about Rabbi Shneur
Zalman. Oh, I want you alone. Yes, that's a good point. That's a very good point. He doesn't want any of these revelations, and he just goes beyond. Yes. The lozu bilvad the gamka, not only the gamka shasecher shalom echayiv beofen acher. Let's imagine that a person's intellect suggests or demands that one should do something in a different way, but the Torah says, you know, do X. And normal, standard way of understanding this situation is do Y. Don't do X, do Y. But the Torah says do X. So one level is, you take no notice of the normal way of looking at it. Kol el gam zeh, look in the brackets, including also the idea, she'enu mitchashev im zeh she'yomru alav, he's not bothered by what people will say about him, she'han hagato yehefer haseichel, that what he's doing is the opposite of intellect. So in other words, there's our own intellect to contend with, Our own intellect means the way in which we, like, our way of, if you like, our bourgeois way of looking at the world, the limited bourgeois way of looking at the world. And then comes a sort of an inspiring spiritual teaching which says, live, do something in a different way. So on the one hand, there's our own bourgeois sensibility. And on the other, there's what other people will say about us. Ele yetera mizu, but even more. The fact that the person gives himself or herself over to godliness is not because his or her intellect says, look, it's true that you don't understand, but nonetheless, God is beyond understanding, so follow that. So in other words, intellect itself can say, follow something beyond intellect. Because seichel itself, intellect itself, is able to recognize that there are things beyond intellect. But he says, no. Shemaniach etatzmo, this is verse 20, line 21. He abandons himself to godliness, b'li shum cheshbonot, without any calculations. Don't tell me what intellect says or doesn't say, what's above or in intellect. This is the right thing to do, and this is what I'm going to do. You know, so it's... you know, if we would imagine this in sort of very simple human terms, you're walking along and you're crossing a river, a bridge over a river, and suddenly you see there's someone drowning in the river. So you don't calculate. You rip off your clothes and you jump into the river and you're going to try and help that person. There's no, you know, assuming... on some minimal level that you think you're going to be able to help. You know, if you can't swim, don't jump. you know, this is what has to be done, and you're not going to go into any kind of further discussion about it. You're just going to do it. So that's the letter Yud. So the letter Yud represents an ability to totally abandon self. Now, that might be in, it might be in a very prosaic way. You know, a person who's running a business and a lot of his custom comes on Saturday, and then he starts trying to keep Shabbat, and he's faced with the question, you know, should he shut his shop on Saturday, you know, and all the arguments backwards and forwards and what people would advise him. And he makes this jump. You know, so he's doing something which other people might say is very irrational, and how can you do it? But nonetheless, he makes the jump. So that's the letter Yud. The inyan ahei rishona, and the first letter hey, like there's yud and then hey, then vav and then hey. So the first letter hey, hu itbonanut, is contemplating eich shekol agiluyim shebeolamot, that all the revelations in all the worlds, afilu agilu the sovet kol almin, even the revelation of the transcendent radiance, umikol shekein agilu de memalik kol almin, and even more the radiance within the worlds, they're like nothing. They all come from many concealments of the divine. In other words, like we had from Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, I don't want your Garden of Eden, which is one kind of revelation. I don't want your world to come, which is a higher kind of revelation. I want just you alone. Now this sense that everything in existence is nothing in relation to the divine, now that can have different ways of affecting the person. The person can be affected by, in a way of great yearning, like that saying of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, very, very intense yearning. But it can also lead to a person looking very critically at themselves. And they say, in the face of this infinite sea of godliness, what am I? I'm like concealment. I'm a blotch.
which is hiding,
hiding the godliness in the world. Now, I had a discussion about this with Joe just recently. You know, so Joe said, no, you know, if a person feels so bad, you know, it's negative. But within Hasidic thought, you have the concept that a person sees themselves as a blotch. I mean, it doesn't have to be like this, you know, and one can look at it in a different way, in a more gentle way, if you like. But a person like Reb Mendel Fudofas, the person in this paint drawing of it, the one on the right, a very great teacher, his way of seeing the self is to be able to see one's own self as something which is hiding godliness. And that's really why you want to get away from that self and recognize just the simple oneness of God. When I first went to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe, so, you know, at some time, like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, finally I've been waiting, you know, finally come into the room with the Rebbe, and the Rebbe's sitting there. And so for 9 minutes, the Rebbe spoke with me. And when I came out, I felt the Rebbe reveals yourself to you to the extent that you can bear. Because if we saw too much of our own self, we'd be turned to stone. So it would be too horrific. So he enables you to see as much of yourself. In other words, to see how the negative dimension of one's own self, so that one is able to transcend it. Now that's a.
Wouldn't it be good to have a positive feeling when you came out?
Well, that's you see, in a sense, that's the most positive feeling, because that was very liberating. A very liberating concept. Because what traps us is our own self, very often. And so one is trapped by the self. And what is going to free us? You know, we have tremendous self-love and self-adulation. So at what point are we going to be able to break free from the self? So that's the subtle concept. That what he's explaining here is that by considering that all these different dimensions of godliness are just a concealment, and God is beyond it. And now, we could take a much more gentle way of interpreting what's going to happen when you experience it, when you think of godliness in those terms, and you just feel a tremendous yearning.
But isn't there a sort of a yearning to become a stronger vessel, to have more light in your life as well, isn't that?
I think that, yes. I think, you see, you have to... That's another paradox. Because the aim is, first of all, the aim is not to die. One is going to continue living. And one isn't going to live just passively. There's a whole lot of energy that has to be used in the right direction. So, as it was put by the Rebbe in a talk once, the aim is complete selflessness, but it doesn't mean you lie inert over the doorway, you know, like not doing anything, which everyone then steps on. And it doesn't mean that you can't turn right when you're driving. Here in England, you know, turn right at a crossing. You need a certain oomph just in order to face the traffic. So, so selflessness, in fact, you know, I would say the effect of selflessness is that it reveals a much stronger kind of intensity. The person, you know, like Reb Mendel over there, the intensity with which he lived his life, you know, during the Stalinist years in Russia, where he was helping Jews escape from Russia. Eventually they put him in prison for 9 years because of that. But in Russia, but the energy, and when he came out, he was enormously active. When they released him from prison, they decided to release him from prison with no clothes. So immediately, the Hasidim somehow, collected him, gave him clothes. So he said, so they made a kind of an appeal. We need clothes for Reb Mendel. You know, he was already a very famous person. So been in prison 9 years, because of his work in helping Jews escape from Russia, So a large amount of money was collected to buy him clothes. So he said to someone, right, I want you to look after this money. A tiny proportion of it he used to buy some clothes. And he said, you just hang on to this money and I'll tell you when I need it. So then a few weeks later, he came to some town and he organized a clandestine cheder, teaching children Jewish subject. He said, now I need the money. He used the money for, organizing.
How old was he then?
I actually don't know exactly when he was born. He passed away in 1994. So I would imagine he was, let's say, 84, 85. So he was born around 1910, something like that. So that would be 40. Yeah, it was 50. 19, when, I think he was released in the late 50s. He was released from prison in Russia, but he was kept in Russia. Then Mr. Wilson went on a visit to Russia, and he, thank God, was able to get him out of Russia. His son and daughter lived in England. And so he was...
We knew someone else's parents who got out.
Yes.
What was his surname? Mendel?
Futterfuss. Who do you know?
Boehm.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Surname Boehm.
The mathematician.
Dorothy Boehm's parents. She's a photographer.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Okay, so that's the hay. So the yud and the hay. And then we go on to the next page. That's on line 14. The inyan avav. The concept of the Vav, of the Divine Name, that study of Torah, that after thinking about the way in which all these spiritual revelations are really nothing, you realize that what is true, what is real, is the revelation of the essence of godliness which comes through the Torah. You see that the world is absolutely nothing, really. And what is true is the Torah which comes into the world. So that's the perception that's being described here. And then comes the final hay, line 23 and 24, is the action of the mitzvah. So you have the letter Vav, Torah, and the letter hay, mitzvah. Now, a much simpler way of understanding the Yud-Kei in the soul is that Yud, the letter Yud, is the inspiration. We look at something, at some divine teaching maybe, and we find it inspiring. And then with the letter He, we explore it, we investigate it, and contemplate about it. And as a result of that, this comes to the emotions, which are the Vav. Like the Vav is a letter 6, which represents kindness, severity, mercy, those 6 sphirah. And then the final hey, which is the speech and action of the mitzvah. So that's a much simpler way of looking at the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei inside oneself. But it's just interesting, this very intense and demanding way, which is really a demand for... total self-abnegation. Now, this discourse was said in 1953, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe had recently become Rebbe in 1950. His father-in-law and previous Rebbe passed away. And he's in America. And you could well imagine, in America, you're not going to get the same level of spirituality that you had in Russia. You've got to work on work with what you got, sort of thing. And so it's interesting that he puts this very intense spiritual demand, as we find in Hasidic books printed in the 1820s. You know, but he's expressing this demand that a person should reach for a higher spiritual level. And then he explains the whole concept about the way in which the mitzvah, we're finishing now, I'm sorry, it's so late, the way in which the mitzvah are actually higher than the Torah, because, and this also relates, although it doesn't spell it out, to the idea that the physical world has got this powerful dimension, and the fact that we do a mitzvah with something in the physical world, we take candles and light them for Shabbat, something like this. It's something in the physical world which really reaches to a higher level. And that's the whole idea of this leap that is being expressed, that we are making this movement, that we are drawing from this infinite dimension of Yudke Vavke beyond, and drawing it into the world, and revealing the godliness in the world. And that's the mountains of spices. That's the mountains of spices which we draw into the world. And the word spices, in fact, relates to the word heaven, shamayim. The samim and shamayim are very are similar. And so that's the process that we're able to set in motion. So what we get from this, concluding now, is first of all a way of thinking of the Shema, and this is what I think is something we can take away with us. That in the Shema, there's this Hear, O Israel, the Lord, Hashem, this beyond the Tzimtzum, and then there's Elokeinu, our God, which is like the Tzimtzum, and then drawing that godliness beyond into the godliness within the world, to permeate the world and fill the world with godliness. And then we look again at this Tzimtzum. This Tzimtzum is actually the Yudke Bavke inside us. I think the reason why he gives this kind of very fierce explanation of the Yudke Bavke inside us is because he's looking at it as the way of the darkness. You know, it's like a dark trip that's rather than the bright, a bright experience. But it's that very darkness which enables us to join the higher level of radiance, infinitely higher, with the lower. And in that way, in our own life, carrying out mitzvot, which we do in the physical world, we're able to bring this illumination into the physical world and fill the whole of existence with this infinite radiance, which is the radiance of the world. Yes, because here, if you can, you pass me your Likutei Torah.